Church, open your Bibles again. We're going to be in the book of Revelation again today. We were last week and again this week. We're in a series I've entitled Heaven. And it has been a lot of years of my pastoral time that I have preached a lot of sermons. But, you know, honestly, I've touched tangentially on heaven. But I haven't really had a whole series where I said, hey, let's just really talk deeply about heaven. And I have really enjoyed this. I have felt like there's been things about heaven that I have learned personally. I'm hoping that you're saying, boy, it's the gray matter's getting stirred up here for me too. There's some things I'm thinking about that I haven't thought about before, and I contend that that's a very good thing. You know, it's not a real popular thing to talk about today. Heaven is not something that you hear, you know, radio shows about or things on TV about. No, nobody's reporting on this. So, you know, it's distinct that we would be individuals that would be going to the Scriptures and saying, God, what has God told us about heaven? You know, in the past, there were more theologians that talked a lot more about heaven, one of them being C.S. Lewis. And I quoted from C.S. Lewis last week with the Chronicles of Narnia, The Lion, The Witch, and The Wardrobe. I wondered if any of you have read C.S. Lewis's book called The Great Divorce. Raise your hand if you've ever read that book. There's about 10 of us. Raise your hand if you've read The Screwtape Letters. Now, a lot more, I knew that would be the case. A lot more of you have read that than you have The Great Divorce. Great Divorce is C.S. Lewis's attempt to say, what would it be like for individuals to be in heaven and to be in hell? And in the book, he has some individuals that are in hell that take a magic bus ride to the foot of heaven and talk to individuals that they know personally that are in heaven when they're not. And he really ends up doing some really interesting things with exploring what it might be like to have no sorrow and to have extreme joy, but still know that you have a loved one that didn't make it. So anyway, he plays with some good and interesting things. And as is always the case with C.S. Lewis, he says, hey, this is my attempt to just, you know, say what I think might happen, but don't hold me to that. Go back to the Scriptures. And that's where we're going to be today. But I do have something from C.S. Lewis. It's a quote of his that I want to give you today. He says, if you read history, you'll find that the Christians who did the most for the present world were just those who thought the most of the next. Aim at heaven, and you'll get earth thrown in. Aim at earth, and you'll get neither. My hope today is that you will think more about heaven. In fact, the Scriptures say, Colossians chapter 3, set your minds on things above. And that's my goal for you today, is that you'll think more about heaven than you did before you came today or before we started this series 2 weeks ago. Week one, I had one simple goal for you. I wanted you to believe that heaven and hell are real. That was what week one was all about. I wanted you to leave here saying, wow, okay, this is not something that's some kind of a little story that's made up. It's not something that is something ethereal. Heaven and hell are real places, and I want to live in light of that. Last week, we had something else that happened. We had a big revelation that came to us, and the revelation was, whoa, heaven is like, you know, there's a dual aspect of it, two things, two ways to think about it. And last week, I read from Revelation chapter 21 that the New Jerusalem is falling down out of heaven. It's going to be established here on earth, and that our eternal home, our eternal heaven, is here on earth. And we went through lots of scriptures last week to explore that. But here's the other thought we have to hold in tension. There is an interim earth, or a temporary, interim heaven, or a temporary heaven, as it were. And that's the place where all of the loved ones that we know right now have gone. And if you die before Jesus has returned, it's where you'll go. And it's a temporary heaven, as it were, a holding spot, as it were, until Jesus returns, new bodies are assigned, and the new earth is created on earth. That's what's got to transpire before the temporary or the transitional heaven gives way to the permanent heaven, and that's the one and the place that will be that is forever. So that's what we talked about again last week. We covered the topic last week, where is heaven? This week, we're going to continue on and explore aspects of heaven that are important for us to know. Let me start off with this story. It has not been often, but there is an occasion in which I have got the fortunate news that I'm flying on the plane There's extra spots in first class, and that I have been given a first class seat. Now, again, I could count that on two fingers, I think. Maybe it's happened twice, so it hasn't happened very often. But every time that has happened, I've sat in the first class seats, and I've said, I could get used to this. I've said, well, yes, I will have another Coke, please. Thank you. And I've said, yes, let me take a look at that menu and decide what I would like for my dinner tonight. That sounds like a good plan. Yes, yes, I would love to have that little towel or that little blanket. Yes, I would thank you for that. And so the entire time, it's just been like basking in luxury. It's been wonderful. Now, I will tell you this. Every time I've ever sat in first class, there's been something I have never thought about. I've never said, I wonder what it's like back there in coach. I wonder if they've gotten any peanuts yet. I wonder if there is somebody with their arm over the rest scrunching me. You know, I wonder, I've got a football field of space up here right now. I wonder if it's feeling cramped back there. Because I know the answer to that, right? I mean, that's exactly what's happening. We're talking about heaven today. We're talking today about first class. We're talking today about something that you are longing for, and you're going to arrive at that destination, that space, and you're not going to look back. You're not going to say, gosh, I wonder what coach was like. You know, I wonder what old earth is like, because I want that in some way. No, you're going to have your sights set. You're going to be moving forward. You're going to arrive at the destination where God has planned for you, and you're going to say, wow, I can't believe it. This is even real. I can't believe that I'm here on the doorstep of this right now. There's four aspects of heaven today that I want to cover with you. I want you to be asking questions. What is heaven like? What do I long for? What do I want to think about more? And so today I want to stir you down that path with the hope that you'll go and explore more of the scriptures, the hope that you'll go more and think and imagine of what heaven will be like. So let me paint some broad strokes for us today, and here's where I want to begin. First, heaven will be strikingly similar to earth. When I say heaven, I mean the new earth, the one that God is going to create. Because the New Jerusalem is going to fall down out of heaven, and it will be placed here on earth. And last week we read from Revelation chapter 21. Let me just cover a little portion of that again today. Here it is, Revelation 21, 1 and 2. Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had, there it is, passed away, there no more. And the sea was no more, and I saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God. Now, my guess is that you have not thought very much about heaven. And if you have thought about heaven, you probably thought that heaven is a very foreign place, like going to a foreign country in some way, and, you know, a place where you don't necessarily know the customs and you don't know what everything's all about. I love something that, again, my friend Randy Alcorn says in his book. And again, I won't give you a picture of that today, but I'm highly recommending that Randy Alcorn's book, Heaven, is one that you will read. And this is what he says. A common misconception about heaven is that it will be unfamiliar. On the contrary, the scriptures are saying to us that it's going to be something maybe more familiar than what we originally imagined it might be. Last week we discovered that God is going to destroy the world. Heavens and earth are in the process of passing away. We just read that. And normally when we think about the word destroy, we're thinking in our heads, it's something like total annihilation. It's something that is a final destruction. It's absolute. But that idea is not completely what's happening in the scriptures. It's something in the scriptures in which there is a passing away, but it's more like almost a temporary destruction because it's being reversed through resurrection and restoration. So catch that with me. It's something that is going away, but God is in the process of restoring, renewing, and rebuilding. And so it's not as if it's annihilated, but it's in the process of being resurrected to something brand new. Let me give you the idea of this. When we say the earth is passing away, we don't necessarily mean out of existence, but we mean passing away from its current state. Its current state is what will be no more. Let me give you an analogy. This one really helped me this week. We say the caterpillar passes away, but the butterfly emerges. And by that, we mean literally there's no more caterpillar. The caterpillar is gone. You could no longer look at that insect and say it's in caterpillar form. But the butterfly has emerged, and there's a continuity between those two stages of that insect. And similarly, that's going to be the way that we're going to look at Earth. We're going to say, no, it has passed away, but there's some striking similarity between what has gone and what has come, and we recognize some features of that. This concept that I'm explaining to you right now is a concept theologically called redemptive continuity. Redemptive continuity. And I've got a little definition of that up here for you today of what redemptive continuity is. It means God does not completely scrap the original and start over. Instead, he takes the fallen and corrupted and restores, refreshes, and renews it to its original design. And so we're in the process of understanding here that God is taking an old earth, he's passing that away, but he's creating a new earth that's got these qualities that are still there about old earth, but are now refreshed and renewed and redesigned and restored back to what the original idea was behind that. That's happening too with your bodies, and we're going to talk about that next week of why our bodies also fit this idea of redemptive continuity, because we're not going to be completely erased even though we're losing our body and getting another one. There's going to be continuity between the us that is underneath that. That is true with the earth too. The new earth will be still the earth, but it will be a changed earth. It will be a converted earth, a resurrected earth, still recognizable in some ways, but with some brand new aspects to it, features to it, and that's going to be our new home. The new earth, there's constant hints of the old earth that will be there. It will be familiar things, but somehow better. Like, let me give you an example. Every time I've ever seen the Grand Canyon, or the one time that I've gone to the Grand Canyon, my jaw has dropped because I've been like, wow, this is amazing. And if you've been there before, it's almost like you reach out and you're like, is that real? I mean, because you're reaching out to just say, it's almost like it's a painting somehow, and it's just magnificent. In the new earth that God is going to create, I believe, and I think the scriptures are teaching us, that there will be hints of like, wow, this is the Grand Canyon. But somehow it's the Grand Canyon even better, as if it could be. And there's something even more vibrant about it, more real about it than I've ever seen before. Places like the Eiffel Tower will still, I think, be in existence that we will be able to visit and realize is restored to something brand new. The Great Barrier Reef, the Alps in Switzerland. There's lots of places where we will say, wow, it's like I've been there before, but somehow it's new, it's refreshed, it's totally alive in all of the truest sense. And again, Alcorn says this, we don't trade earth's beauty for heaven's, but retain earth's beauty and gain an even deeper beauty. So there's something even more that's going to be about this new earth. And so there's a continuity between the two, between the old earth and the new earth. And there's going to be parts of new earth that we're going to recognize as our former home, only renewed, better, and restored to its fullest. Second, heaven is unspoiled. Heaven is unspoiled. There's a walk I take around my house, and it's a little path that goes down from my house down to the water. And I follow this path, and along the way, there's two different creeks. I walk down, and there's one creek that I was on my right as I walk down, and another one on my left as I walk back up a different road. And one of the things I've noticed about one of the creeks is it's little more than, you know, a small little drainage, and it's mostly runoff from the homes that are in the area. One of the creeks is pretty nice and pure and looks like it's running clear, but the one creek that I'm referring to right now has got a kind of a red sludge in it. And it's just, it's red. It's very evident that some kind of a chemical has gotten into that. It looks if I put my foot in that, I might never come back. I mean, you know, it'd be gone. It's like, whoa, hey. It's got a little odor to it. And it's just like you look at it and you're like, that's not right. I mean, there's some reeds and stuff around it. And it's just like, that's not right. And I never have any temptation to go down and do anything with that water or that muddy sludge because I just like, that's kind of off limits. I bring that up because that creek is a reminder that we live in a spoiled earth. We live in an earth that has taken a beating, as it were. And we live in an earth in which scientists say is polluted more and more each day. In fact, I read a little bit about pollution this week. Scientists believe that there's four different kinds of pollution. I looked at it and said, that makes sense to me. There's air pollution, water pollution, land pollution, and noise pollution. And of course, there's subcategories on all those. There's different ways to actually spoil water than one way. I mean, there's multiple ways. And we have become very good at that. The earth is spoiled because sinful people have spoiled it. But hear this. Heaven is going to be unspoiled. It's going to be perfect, perfectly restored back to all of its beauty, all of its grandeur. And here's the big piece. We will no longer be sinful, so we will no longer have the desire to spoil earth once again. Think about that. Let that just sink in for a second. The earth's going to be great because the people that are the predominant agents around spoiling it are not going to have that desire or that capacity to do that any longer. We're no longer going to be sinful, so we won't have the desire to spoil it all over again. Our ability to understand the earth, to use the earth, to enjoy the earth is going to be at its all-time peak, and it will be something that is wonderful for us to do. Here's the way that Peter talks about our lives, our future lives, in which they're unspoiled. 1 Peter chapter 3. Praise be to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. In his great mercy, he has given us new birth into a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead, and into an inheritance, here it is, that can never perish, spoil, or fade. This inheritance is kept in heaven for you. Now, I realize Peter is talking here about our salvation. He's saying our salvation is secure, it'll never perish, it'll never spoil. But I think that can be equally as applied to the place where we're going to be. Our salvation is going to be that way, our physical proximity is going to be that way, and we're going to be in a world in which it is unspoiled, and our salvation and our surroundings are going to be the same. This week there was an interesting story that was in the news. In fact, I have a picture of what happened this week. There were some guys that went into into Lake Mead National Park, and they decided to take some ancient sand rock formations is what they really were, and they decided to push them over and to, well, defame that spot. And, you know, I wish I could say this is the only time that's ever happened, but I've read the news enough, and so have you, to know that people are constantly doing that. I remember that some people did that recently in Arches National Park. And, of course, the number of times that I've seen stories about people writing graffiti onto, you know, ancient things that are thousands of years old. And like, graffiti, for what purpose? These individuals that did this, they're still trying to find out who they are. And if they find them, they said that they're in big trouble. But they've been now given names. These individuals have been named Tourons. And that's the mesh of two words, tourist and moron. So they're now referring to them as Tourons. I think it's a great name for them. But you know, it makes you wonder, what's going on the inside of these folks that they want to destroy something just because they can? Do you know that that impulse will not be in them or you any longer? You will not have the desire to destroy or defile or deface. The present world is filled with all kinds of sin and decay and death. Violence and wars and natural disasters, those are all true of our world right now. We're living in a world that's spoiled right now. It's full of decay and pollution, but we're headed to a world that is pristine and will not be defiled. And in fact, your greatest impulse on the inside of you will be to honor and to stand in awe of all that God has created and all that you have the ability to use. And that's what's going to be happening on the inside of you. I hope you hear what I'm saying here. The new earth is going to be an unspoiled place, but guess what? So are you. And that's what's going to make it so good and pristine, is because you won't be destroying it anymore, and neither will I. And that's an amazing thing that's true about heaven. Third, heaven will be massive and glorious. At the center of the new earth will be the place that God calls the New Jerusalem. We read about that in Revelation chapter 21, about the city descending down from heaven. This is not just a figure of speech, it's a literal location. And I want to talk more about this city in just a minute. First of all, it is massive, and we hear more about it. Revelation chapter 21, if you haven't noticed by now, is a very important passage. We've read the top of it, but today I want to read down a little bit further into it. I want to read from Revelation 21, starting in verse 15. It says, "The angel who talked with me," again, this is John on a visit to heaven, as it were, "and this angel is taking him around and showing him things, and the angel is now showing him something that he's measuring. The angel who talked with me had a measuring rod of gold to measure the city, its gates, and its walls. The city was laid out like a square, as long as it was wide. He measured the city with the rod and found it to be 12,000 stadia in length, and as wide and as high as it is long." And so you're asking me the question, what is a stadia? I have no idea, no point of reference at all for this. If he's measuring the city that's going to fall down from heaven to earth, how exactly big is this? Well, I've done the math, or at least I've read about individuals who've done the math on what a stadia is, and it is 1,400 miles to a side. And some of you are still saying, I'm not sure I kind of get that. And so I have a picture here that will help you understand the footprint of the brand new New Jerusalem that's falling down onto the new earth. Here it is. If you can see 1,500 miles or 1,400 or 1,500 miles, it is the distance that stretches from Florida all the way up past the Great Lakes into Canada and all the way from roughly New York over to Colorado. That is the architecture or the footprint of the new heaven or the New Jerusalem that's falling onto the new heaven or the new earth. And it's going to be humongous. In fact, that length of footprint is 2 million square miles. 2 million square miles. I mean, it's massive. Here's what else I want you to know, is that the footprint is this big 1,400 or 1,500 miles square. But in addition to that, it's also got height. And it's got as much height as it does width. And so we're given depictions of this new heaven that actually is going to go 1,400 miles up into the air. I've put a little box over there, or I've got a picture of them putting a box over there, or a cube, so you can see about how high it would be off of Earth. If you built a building that high, it would be 600,000 floors high. So, I mean, that, just get that into your head. And so it's like, man, we're given this immense, immense location for the New Jerusalem. And you're like, what's happening in all those stories that go up that high? I mean, are these all, you know, condos in some way? Or are these all floors that have parks in them? Or, I mean, I have no idea. But it's just, it's massive in its dimensions. And furthermore, I mean, the Bible just starts there. This is just the city, all right? There's other places outside the city where the new earth is expanding. And I have no idea what God's going to do with places like oceans or mountains, but I'm sure it's going to be jaw-dropping. I mean, it's just going to be beyond compare. And so we're given these images that are like hard for us to even fathom, because they're just so huge and so humongous and so beyond anything that we've ever seen before. But it's also not just that it's massive. The main city is going to also be glorious. We're told that it's brilliant and shining because the glory of God is there. We're told that the city is gold, but it's somehow transparent like glass. I don't know how the two of those fuse together, but that's the way the city is going to appear to us. The city is going to have all the advantages of a city, but none of the disadvantages of today's cities. Let me give you an example. There's going to be natural wonders and magnificent architecture and thriving culture, but none of the drawbacks like crime and homelessness and sirens and traffic. Randy Alcorn in his book says, yes, it really is truly heaven on earth. I mean, that's what's going to be happening, because the new earth is going to be so magnificent in all of its ways. Some of you say here, you know, I, don't much like cities. And you know, I don't really travel that much down into our city anymore. And I know many of you are the same way. It's just like, you know, I don't want to go down there and be depressed. I don't want to go down there and wonder what might happen with my car. I don't want to go down there and just go through all the rigmarole, all right? Well, you're going to change your mind with this city, because this city is going to be one in which it's just on all cylinders. It's a city that's got the arts and music and sports and food and no pickpockets, no porn shops, no drugs, no prostitution, no crime. And everywhere where you look, the artist's fingerprints are going to be all around you, and you're going to have a sense of awe and a sense of gratitude. The whole new earth is going to be where God is said to now inhabit with his people, but the new city, the new Jerusalem, that's going to be his living room, and you're going to want to be there. All of us have been dreaming all of our lives for heaven. We just don't know it. Every time we're going out and we're saying, man, that's an amazing waterfall, it's as if God is saying, you've seen nothing yet. Every time I look at a hummingbird in my yard, and I'm like, this is an amazing creature. It can like float in midair. I love this. And God says, you haven't seen nothing yet. You're looking out over the Puget Sound, and you're going, oh, what a glorious evening. Oh, man, look at the purples and the oranges that are in the sky and the water. Oh, we get to live here. This is awesome. God's saying, you ain't seen nothing yet. They're all things on the inside that are sparking us to say, oh, my, am I longing for the thing and the place that's even better, and it's the place that God is creating on our behalf. Right now, there's one more thing I want you to see about this new earth. The final aspect of this heaven or new earth is that it's sorrow-free. It's a place that's sorrow-free. This is the way that Isaiah the prophet described the new earth. And remember, Isaiah, he's a prophet that's now prophesied almost 3,000 years ago. So this guy is well before Jesus. And he said, I'm looking all the way out into the future, past this church era, past the time in which Jesus is now returning, and I'm looking at this new earth, and this is what's true about it. Here's what Isaiah says. See, I will create new heavens and a new earth. The former things will not be remembered, nor will they come to mind, but be glad and rejoice forever in what I will create. For I will create a Jerusalem to be a delight and its people a joy. I will rejoice over Jerusalem and take delight in my people. The sound of weeping and of crying will be heard in it no more. And that's exactly what's replicated again in Revelation chapter 21. If you go read that, you're going to see almost that exact thing, is that there's going to be no crying, no tears. There's no sense of feeling as though things are just going wrong. The land is going to feel secure. We're not going to fear death or hunger or illness. And that is going to be an amazing place with no sorrow. Yesterday, I was out. It's going to surprise you, but I was playing pickleball early in the morning. And I was near a school. In fact, we were on a school tennis courts where we were playing. And I noticed it was about 7:30 in the morning, and up came some school buses. And they came rolling up in the parking lot. And I was like, you know, what's that? What's going on here? I even asked some of my friends, what's school buses here on a Saturday? What's going on? And they said, oh, it's for track meets. There's lots of kids that ride the school buses for track meets. And so the buses are coming for track meets. So, you know, I'm waiting there. I'm like, you know, we're playing pickleball and kind of looking at the buses. And I realize that these are kids that are going to attract me, but these are not just any kids. These are some special kids. In fact, there are some kids with special needs. And I heard them interacting, and I heard some yelling and some crying and some moaning, and I heard some consoling, and all those things were going on as the kids were getting ready for, it seemed like an eternity, half an hour or more, just to get on the buses, to get gone to, again, where I think they were probably going that day was a track meet where they were going to be going and competing. And it struck me yesterday, as I'm just thinking about all this, that will not be a scene in heaven. Those kids are somehow going to be restored. There's somehow that their bodies are going to be functioning to their fullest capacity. We're going to talk more about that next week. But here's the real thing. I imagine that their families are going to be so relieved. Wouldn't you as a parent? If you had one of the kids that you've asked a million times, God, why has this all transpired? And now I'm in this location in which there is no sorrow. I'm completely at ease. Everybody around me that's in Christ is again whole and on all cylinders. And this, the relief that I would feel in the midst of that would just be amazing. Heaven is going to be this place because there's no sorrow in which there's true rest. And by rest, I do not mean inactivity. We're going to talk next week also about what we're going to do in heaven. And it's far from inactive. So when I say we're fully at rest, what I mean is that we never have the sense in which the bottom is going to fall out of it again. We never have the sense in which a disaster is right around the corner. Tears are wiped free. They're gone. There'll be no more tears of misfortune. There's no more tears of lost love. There's no more tears of remorse or regret. If you've ever maybe had a loved one that's died or maybe an infant that's died, that's going to be somehow something that you're going to be consoled in, and it's going to be okay. Maybe you've been in an accident, you've been impaired. Somehow you're going to be restored and you won't live out of the loss of that anymore. You're going to be completely repaired, totally consoled. It will be like a mother that comes to you and with a child gives you all of the care, all of the healing that you need, and somehow the sorrow that you've had all your life about that instance is going to be somehow erased, somehow gone, and you won't need to live out of that any longer. And that is the nature of the new earth, the heaven that God is creating on our behalf. Well, I hope this has given you just a small taste of what heaven is going to be like. And I'm hoping it's an inviting picture for you. I know it is for me. You know about traveling to destinations around the world today that I like to do a good job of saying, you know, come to us, come to Bora Bora, come to Tahiti, and they'll put slick little advertising inside magazines that you'll see, or they'll put out YouTube videos with the hope that you'll see it and you'll come travel to them. Well, God is doing something very similar with us. He's saying, I'm trying to paint a picture for you of the type of place I'm creating for you, only here's the difference. It's not a vacation for you. It's your ultimate home, and that's what I'm inviting you to think about and inviting you to come into. And here's what's true about all of us right now. God is attempting to create a heaven fit for us, but he's also creating us to be fit for heaven. So both of those go hand in hand. There's some changes that have to happen inside of all of us in order to get us ready for that new heaven. There's some changes that have to happen in our bodies. And again, next week we talk about that. What's happening with our bodies and what will we do in heaven? So I've tuned back in for that. I hope you're here for it. Ecclesiastes 3 says this, that God has created eternity in the hearts of every human being. There's something buried on the inside of us. It says eternity is placed in our hearts. And so God is wanting us to long for heaven and wanting us to long for what is eternity. He's wanting us to long for what it might be like, what our body is going to be like when we're there. And I guarantee you in a word that it's going to be exhilarating. It's going to be something that God is preparing for us and for all of those who love him and love his son. That's what's going to be happening. And it's going to be something in which we are living for eternity in a place that's beyond compare. God has placed eternity in your heart. I want you to live out of that. Think about it. Long for that. Because heaven, in a word, is going to be a glorious place. Let's pray. Father, thank you for giving us the passages of Scripture that talk about heaven and about a new earth. That's like language that's like inviting us to imagine what this new place is going to be like. And Lord, you're longing for us to think not just of our lives on earth, but to think about the location ultimately where you're taking us for all of eternity, with the hope that that will actually transpire into a different kind of life now for us, a life in which we have fidelity to you, allegiance to you, love for you, and we have an internal desire in order to keep your commands of loving others around us. Lord, thank you for that. And thank you for the vision of heaven and the reality of heaven that is on the horizon for all of us. We submit to you today. We love you today. We long for your appearing today and all that you have for us. And all God's people said, amen.